Welcome to the Project Nurse Podcast with nurse entrepreneur Daniel Diaz.
Good morning, everyone. This episode is brought to you by Fig Scrubs, 100% ridiculously soft. Fig Scrubs are literally the most comfortable practical scrubs I've ever worn. I love their product. They're antimicrobial, and through their Threads for Threads campaign, for every pair of scrubs you buy, Figs donates a pair to a healthcare provider in need all over the world. They've donated scrubs in over 28 countries. That, ladies and gentlemen, is called social entrepreneurship, and it is the future of business. Go to wearfigs.com and enter promo code PROJECTNURSE15 to get 15% off of your first order today. That's wearfigs, WEARFIGS.com, and use the promo code PROJECTNURSE15, all one word. You'll look good, feel good, and do some good all at the same time. So let's get back to this episode. This is episode number 7 of the Project Nurse Podcast, where we interview top nursing professionals and find the keys to their success. Today we are chatting with Dr. Renee Thompson, who is a leading expert on nurse bullying. We talk about the different types of bullying and the exact scripts you can use to confront a toxic coworker. We also do a deep dive into Renee's business, exploring the steps she has taken to get to a level where she is not only making a full-time living as a speaker, she is also successful enough that her husband has since been able to retire from his job and spend time traveling the circuit with her, supporting her and her business. This episode is full of a ton of gold. I know you'll love it, so let's get straight to it. Our interview with Dr. Renee Thompson. I'm here with Dr. Renee Thompson, who is one of the, if not the top expert on nurse bullying. But I wanted to start by asking, of all the topics in the nurse community that you could be solving all the problems, why nurse bullying?
Yeah, well, thank you, Daniel. Well, it all started about 7 years ago, where I was working, I had a corporate position, and I was basically responsible for professional development in a health system that had about 10,000 nurses. And I developed programs, so programs for new nurses, preceptors, looked at orientation, students. So I found myself, in order to be able to actually develop those programs, I was doing a lot of focus groups and talking to a lot of people. And I really wanted to find out, you know, what they wanted to see in these programs. And you know what? All they wanted to do was talk about nurse bullying and how poorly they were treated by other nurses. And you know, I caught myself. I ended up hearing myself say something about, well, you know, that's just the way it is in nursing. And it was as though somebody held a mirror to my face and I saw myself saying that. And I it was like a defibrillator. I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I have become one of these people who have just normalized these behaviors, and it's not okay. And it was in that moment that I decided that, you know what, I wasn't going to just accept it as the norm anymore, and I was going to do something about it. And it happened to be around the time that I had the itch that I really wanted to start my own company as a speaker, because I had found myself in front of so many audiences speaking, and I always had, you know, great feedback, and I always felt that that was where I belonged. And so I decided that that was going to be my topic and that was going to be my purpose. And that was, I actually have officially had my own business for 6 years at the end of May. So I'm super excited.
That's awesome. Congrats. Happy almost anniversary. So, rewinding a little bit, you started your career in a cardiac step down unit, right?
I did.
Okay. And then you transitioned into being a unit director, where you were quoted as saying, being a unit director chewed me up and spat me out. What does that mean? Like, what was your experience on the administrative side?
Well, I had been in clinical practice, you know, brand new nurse, cardiac step down unit, left after about 5 years, started working in home care. Did a lot of work there, left that position after about 4 or 5 years, started working in a managed care company. And I guess towards the end of my time in managed care, which I will tell you, I learned a lot about the delivery of healthcare. I was a quality manager, and it was the first time I had a management role, but I had a staff of three. And these were people that I had to say, please go home. It's 5 o'clock. You have a family. I mean, they were so dedicated and they worked so hard. Well, I decided that I really missed the inpatient side of nursing and patients, and I took a position as a unit director. But what I found was that I went from having a staff of three high performers to a staff of 75 on a unit that basically had the worst reputation out of any unit in that entire 600-700 bed hospital. And I was ill prepared. I had no idea how to deal with the disruptive behaviors of my employees. And it took me, I stayed there for about a year and a half. I learned a lot, but I really had no guidance. I had no skill development in knowing how to manage people. There were a few employees that I knew the second month I was there, they needed to go. Like, I owed it to the human race, okay, to make sure that they were never responsible for patient care. And it took all of my energy, all of my time to make sure that they no longer were employed there. And by the time I was done, Daniel, I was exhausted. Like I said, I felt like they chewed me up and spat me out. And I took a step down from that. And I thought, you know what? I'm not willing to do this any longer, not in that environment. And then since then, I've learned a lot about leadership and management. There are times I wish I could go back and be that unit director again, because now I know what I'm doing. Okay.
But, I think it's important to talk about this because in my experience on the floor and in the operating room, I was always like that, a liaison, like in between the staff and the management. And what I noticed on both sides of the equation is that there's this like us versus them mentality. Yeah. And a lot of the times the staff, I mean, you know, we're frustrated, the managers are frustrated, but the managers have their hands tied and it seems like they can't do what they want to do. So do you have any, you mentioned like doing everything that you can do. Could you give some insight onto like how hard it is as a unit director to even get rid of people that are obviously toxic? Like, what are the steps that are needed?
Well, one of the things that I found out, once I realized that there were some people there that, I mean, a couple of them were nurses, a few of them were nursing assistants. I went to human resources and I said, this person has to go. Well, they said, well, what documentation do you have? Well, this was back in the day when we had everything in file folders and everything was written. There wasn't one piece of documentation on their behaviors or even their performance in their files. Wow. And the previous unit directors before me, I found out, because some of them were still in the organization, they just moved on to other things. They had also said, oh my gosh, yes, I had to deal with this person, but nobody documented anything. So I had to start from the beginning. So my advice is, and a lot of people think that, for example, I would have a staff member come into my office, shut the door, you know, it's going to be bad when they shut the door, and they would tell me about horrific behavior of one of their coworkers. And I would say, can you please write that down? And they'd say, oh, I'm not writing anything down, because, you know, they fear retaliation, and that's a whole other conversation. Well, I didn't realize it then, and this is something that I teach. Even if they're not willing to document, that doesn't mean you can't document. I should have started a documentation trail very early, and I didn't do that for a while. And so then it took me longer to have enough evidence to support why I thought this person needed to leave the organization. I mean, there's the disciplining people for, you know, call-offs and showing up late and those types of things, but that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about people who are really toxic to the unit and who were just not caring for patients in the way they should have. So documentation is key, and start a documentation trail very early.
Yeah. And when it's all said and done, you're talking like months and months have gone by, right? Maybe even years. And yeah. How many good staff members left during that time because it took so long to get to get that Absolutely. Kind of result. Yeah. So it may help for those of us listening to define what nurse bullying actually is. What are the differences between bullying and someone just having a bad day or multiple bad days strung together sure. and taking it out on everybody around them?
Yeah, that's a really good question so that we can engage in a conversation about this, because I think this is one of the biggest issues. We tend to label all bad behavior bullying. And when we do that, we really do a disservice to true bullying. And one of the things that I talk a lot about, especially in my workshops, and I do some keynotes on this topic, how do you know if your coworker's a bully or maybe just a drama queen, or maybe your coworker's a jerk, or you know what, maybe your coworker's just having a bad day. I mean, think about the stressful environments that we work in as nurses. You know, think about healthcare and life and death situations. The demands that are placed upon us are outrageous at times. And sometimes we're not always on our best behavior, but we're not all bullies. So a lot of nurses, they'll reach out to me and they'll say, you know, my coworker's a bully, my coworker's bullying me. This is something that I always look for. So really, for a behavior to be considered bullying, it has to meet three criteria. The first criteria is that there has to be a target. So Daniel, I work with you and I don't like you. So I give you the worst patient assignments. I nitpick when you give me report. I openly criticize you and talk about you behind your back, but I'm nice to everybody else. So there has to be a target. It could be one person or maybe a small group of people. I work the night shift and I hate all the day shift people. I work the day shift and I hate all the night shift, which is a big problem. Or I'm an older nurse and I hate all new people. So there has to be a target, one person or a small group. The behavior has to be harmful in some way. So let's say I roll my eyes at you. Mm-hmm. Is that harmful? Well, it's not very nice, but it's not harmful. Unless it's a part of a whole group of other behaviors that are targeted towards me. But what we're looking for is that behavior harmful to patients? If okay. I don't give you all the information you need because I'm setting you up to fail, that's harmful to patients, okay? If I give you the silent treatment and refuse to answer your questions when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're a brand new nurse working in an ICU, that's harmful to patients. So the behavior has to be harmful. But I think the third most important criteria is that the behavior has to be repeated over time. It just can't be one time I get testy with you and my patient codes. You know, it has to be a demonstrated pattern of behavior. And some of the other experts believe that for it to be considered bullying, it has to go on for at least 6 months.
Wow.
I disagree. I disagree with that. I think you can establish it as bullying in just a few weeks, because I think about these new nurses that enter into the workforce. Sometimes they're only on orientation for a few weeks and they're bullied during yeah. orientation. So that's bullying. It has to be, there has to be a target, the behavior has to be harmful, and it has to be repeated over time. Everything else, like when I think of incivility, they tend to be lower level behaviors, like the eye rolling, okay. the gossip, those types of things. But here's what's not bullying. When the manager is trying to hold the employee accountable for their performance, how? Because nurses will reach out to me and say, my manager is a bully. She's bullying me. I'm like, well, what did your manager do? She wrote me up. What did she write you up for coming into work late? How often did you come into work late? Okay. That's not bullying. That's holding you accountable. And bullying is not conflict. You and I can have a difference of opinion. That's not bullying if I express myself in a respectful manner that I don't agree with you. That's not bullying. So again, and here's what I find, Daniel. When I go into organizations to do sort of a deep dive and find out what's happening, I find that there's not a lot of bullying, but there's an awful lot of incivility.
Yeah.
Way more.
And mm-hmm. are the tactics for dealing with incivility similar to dealing with bullying?
Well, yes and no. Bullying tends to be more actionable. Most organizations have a policy in place that address bullying behavior. Incivility, it's not as actionable. When I think of incivility, I think about work culture.
Okay.
I think about just sort of the team dynamics or the culture on that unit. That, you know, I do a lot with healthy work environments. And when we look at healthy work environments, yes, we have to address bullying, but we really focus on creating a civil, professional work environment. So incivility is not as actionable. It's a lot harder to actually align somebody's eye rolling with poor patient outcomes.
Right.
Bullying, it's a lot more clear. Okay. So yeah, that's the difference.
Yeah. But it's also so important too, because again, all of this is leading to a toxic work environment.
Oh my gosh. Yes. You're so right. Because like I said, I don't see a lot of true bullying out there. It's there. Don't get me wrong. But I see way more incivility, and we've normalized these behaviors for so long that people don't even realize they're doing it.
Right.
Don't even realize it. Mm-hmm.
And do you have a specific story in mind that you can share with us about nurse bullying? Maybe an instance where the bully actually turned their behavior around, where you worked with them, and that's just something I've always been curious with. Mm-hmm. Is you know, we've all been in places where it just seems like people never change, and so
yeah.
I'm curious if anybody you've experienced actually has changed.
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to pick one. I've got many, many. I'll give you a recent example. I was working with an organization just over the last 2 weeks. What I do, here's something that I always find works very, very well in an organization as a first step. I'll have an organization bring me in and I'll do a half-day workshop for their leadership team and almost the exact same workshop for their staff. Okay?
Okay.
All about bullying, and it's really to raise awareness. It's like my foundational workshop, okay? And sometimes we'll do leadership twice and staff twice, so I might spend a couple of days there doing these. Well, this one organization, they hired me to come in, and I did a leadership, and then I did a staff. And then before I went there, though, they said, oh my gosh, we're going to make this mandatory for our leaders. Is there any way that you can do a second leadership workshop on the next day? And I said, I can't, already book somewhere else. So we worked it out that actually I was going to be in that area the following week, which was last week. I had somebody at this workshop this last week approach me, and she said, you know, I work with somebody who I always said is a bully. He's very rude, openly criticizes, just very nasty, disrespectful. Okay. She said, but I've noticed over the last week that he's come into work and he's completely different. It's really weird. He's nice. He says good morning. He's respectful. He's offering to help. And I said something to him after a couple of days. I'm like, I've noticed something different in you. And he said, I went to that workshop last week and I saw myself in what she was talking about. And I realized how I come across, and I don't want to be like that anymore. And he says, I just want to apologize for the way I've treated you in the past. I'm like, whoa.
Wow.
I mean, for somebody to admit that. But it happens all the time. I will teach people different scripts to say to somebody that they've been dealing with for years, and they'll call them on their behavior one time and it stops the behavior. So it's like, we've been using silence as a strategy for so long, and we're not talking about these things. But for some people, when you start talking about it, they recognize themselves, and then they realize how they've been behaving. But there's got to be a willingness for them to change too, because some people have no sense of self-awareness.
Exactly.
So yeah, sometimes all it takes is one time, but then that person has to work on it. Because what I said to her is, okay, now what you have to do, because he may backslide, so you have to keep reinforcing that type of behavior. And if he starts down that ugly path again, you need to call him on it in a respectful manner. Like, hey, going down that path again. Okay, let's talk about this. But yeah, I have numerous success stories.
You mentioned in an interview that you yourself were the victim of a covert bully. First, what is the difference between covert and overt bullying, and what was your experience dealing with it personally?
Bless you.
Excuse me.
Bless you. Yeah, when you look at human behavior, it's actually pretty easy to categorize them into just overt and covert. It's like the first step. It's the easiest thing to do. Overt behaviors are, everybody can see them the same way. They're open. They're not hidden. You know what I mean? Like everybody will describe somebody's overt behavior the same way. Somebody screaming and yelling, jumping up and down. I actually saw a nurse executive one time throw a temper tantrum. I mean, physically jumped up and down screaming. I'm like, oh my God. Like I'm thinking like, are we being punked or something? Is she really doing this? Like, oh my gosh. So that's overt. I'd rather deal with an overt bully any day over a covert bully. The covert bullies are the ones who are sneaky. They're so nice to you, but as soon as you turn around, they're stabbing you in the back. And I worked for somebody like this for a few years who I really struggled with because I would put programs together and she would basically tell me that they were awful. But yet then I found out at different meetings, she was taking credit for the work.
No way.
I was struggling. We had an administrative assistant and I would give her things to do because, you know, I had to delegate some things and she would totally mess them up. And I would meet with my boss and I'd say, I'm really struggling. Well, I don't have a problem with her. It must be the way you're delegating. Like she took everything, anything that happened, she put it back on me.
Wow.
And I dealt with that for, I guess, about 2.5 years. Until something happened in the organization and she was no longer there. And then I found out that she had been sabotaging me. She had been taking credit for my work. She had problems with this administrative assistant too, okay? But for 2.5 years, I thought it was me. And I'm gonna tell you, Daniel, that works on you. That ate at me because I kept questioning my competence.
Yeah.
Did I have what it took to be successful? You know, did I have executive leadership, you know, capability, or should I just go back to doing, you know, what I was doing before? Like she really made me question whether or not I had what it took. And I didn't know it. I didn't know until the damage had been done.
Wow. That's unbelievable. And it just goes to like one other question that I'm dying to ask on the topic of nurse bullying is just why? Like, why, despite the fact that our job has us naturally dealing with pain, suffering, death, and sorrow, why are we so unkind to each other? Like, why does nurse bullying even exist anymore in 2017?
Yeah, I will tell you, I don't get it either. I really don't. I don't understand how nurses who are so caring and compassionate to their patients can, you know, be so horrific to each other. Well, there are lots of theories as to why. You take a look at the fact that in nursing, we're a female-dominated profession. And I always say, women aren't always that nice to each other. And it's a shame. But there are, you know, reasons for that stemming from many, many years ago. But, excuse me, you think about the, again, the stressful environments that nurses work in, life and death all the time. I don't think we have been taught good coping mechanisms. So what do? When we're under stress, we lash out at each other or we lash out at somebody that we perceive has a lower status than us. So I'm an experienced nurse. I perceive a brand new nurse has a lower status than me. So I, you know what I mean? Attack the lower status person or even a nursing assistant. Nurses, I think in general feel this forced depression. You can't say no to work. You know, patients are coming in. You can't say, nope. Don't have the capacity to take another patient. You know, think about the documentation that we're required to do now. And now we have to make sure that we focus on patient satisfaction, even when our patients sometimes are cruel to us. You know, anymore, it's rare that you have an organization that's going to back up a nurse who actually says to the patient, I'm not willing to have you talk to me like this. Okay.
And right.
So that's a whole other conversation, but that's a big problem right now. So, you know, you feel this sense of, I have no choice, this powerlessness. And we find that nurses just lash out at each other. I think a lot of nurses treat their colleagues very poorly because that's the way they were treated. And the cycle continues. And it takes somebody to say, just because I was treated this way, I'm going to make sure nobody else feels the same way that I do.
That's right. It's a process and it's up to us to change the culture in our organizations. And I wanted to switch gears because the topics on nurse bullying, they're so well developed on your website, rtconnections.com, that people can take those courses. They're amazing.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about the business side of what you're doing, because this is so fascinating. Yeah. Like, people think that they have to come up with, you know, the next Uber, the next Facebook, but you were able to have this successful business based off of a niche, nurse bullying, within a smaller niche of nursing.
Yeah.
When you first started on this journey, you were in the corporate position. Was there a specific moment where you knew you wanted to create your own company?
You know, it's weird. When I think about that, I remember being young, like grade school. And I wanted to, like, I remember this one time, I wanted to start having these little carnivals. And I was going to develop these carnivals and then teach other people how to have carnivals. I mean, it's just weird, you know, when you think back when you were a kid, your mind. As I've, you know, grown up in school, I was always fascinated by people who started their own business. Even somebody like Aunt Annie's with the pretzels, or with the Amos, the cookies. I was just always interested in that. And I'd love to watch biographies on people who were successful, who started from nothing and then ended up, you know, being a huge success. But I didn't know as I got older really what I wanted to do. Well, I started finding myself in front of audiences speaking. And the feedback was so overwhelmingly positive. Like, the first time I was on stage at a conference, you know, I had 750 people in my audience.
Wow.
And I was petrified. But after I started talking, I felt like I was in the zone. Like, it was where I was meant to be. And so many people after that kept asking me if I was a professional speaker. And I'm like, me? Heck no, I'm just up there talking. And I started speaking more and more and having that positive feedback. And then I thought to myself, huh, other people do this. They make a living off of it. Why not me? So I originally wanted to just start speaking on the side, which I did a little bit. But then I knew that for the various reasons that I couldn't continue working full time in the role that I was in and start to grow a speaking company. So I just became a lot more open to opportunity, and I had the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C., supposed to be just for 4 months in an interim leadership role. And that was just going to enable me to break out of my full-time job and start building my company. I ended up staying for 9 months. They would have kept me forever. I would have said yes. And while I was there, I started really thinking about getting a website. What am I going to do? What am I going to offer? What talks am I going to give? And it really just started from there.
What was your role or your job that you transitioned to DC for?
It was an interim leadership role. So there are a lot of these like temporary, you know, leadership positions out there. This was an organization in DC that needed an educator. And they were looking for somebody who had a MedCert certification, who was master's prepared, because at the time I had my master's degree. And when I went there and they found out that I had all this other experience building programs, they were like, oh my gosh, we love you. And I redesigned their entire nurse residency program and preceptor development program, orientation. I loved it. I had a great time. I learned a lot because I really acted as a consultant, but I was actually on the ground working. I lived in DC for 9 months. You know, I fly home every other weekend. I live in Pittsburgh, so it was only a 4-hour drive. So my husband would drive down on the opposite weekend. I tell you what, Daniel, it was an amazing experience. It really forced me out of my comfort zone. And I will tell you, I took a big risk leaving a really secure corporate job that I actually really loved to do this, to start my own company. But I've always been a risk taker. And so I did that. And then slowly started growing my business from there.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes is, greatness lies just outside of your comfort zone.
Yes, you got that right. I mean, I remember when my husband and I moved me into my apartment that they you know, put me in. When I was putting away like some of my things and I'm looking around and I knew he had to leave, I had a panic attack. Like, seriously, I started crying, like sobbing, like, what have I done? Oh my gosh. And then, you know, he helped me, you know, calm me down. And I thought, okay, this is just, I'm feeling fear here and I'm scared, but I know through this will come growth in some way. And again, it was one of the best experiences I've had.
Were there Were there any moments early on that were really challenging for you where you didn't think that your business was going to make it? You didn't think you were going to be able to make a living. What was going on and how did you deal with that?
Oh my gosh. Yes. So when I came back home, because I'm like, I have to go home. I really want to, you know, grow this business. My goal was just to have one paid speaking engagement that year. One paid speaking engagement. And so what I did, because I read a lot about how to start a speaking company, I was on social media. I started my blog. opened up a Twitter account. I didn't even know what a tweet was. Okay. And I had to learn all those things, started a Facebook page. And I remember this one time I was really stressed because I was sending out emails to people, trying to market myself, reaching out to people who I knew, you know, hey, if you need a speaker, because I was willing to do things complimentary just to get exposure. And I got a call from my sister. So I have my baby sister. She's a consultant. She works, she oversees different research projects. And she called me. She lives in California. I'm in Pittsburgh. She called me. She's like, how you doing? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, I don't know. I see you on Facebook. I see you on Twitter. You okay? And I said, well, I told my husband that I'm going to give it 3 years. And if I'm not successful and can't do this in 3 years, I'm going to find a full-time job. She's like, do you love what you do? Like, why are you doing this? And we had that conversation. She says, why would you ever put a time limit on it? How do you know that 3 years and 2 days, that's when you're going to hit it? Like, don't do that to yourself. If this is what you want to do, commit all the way, like full in commit. And I'm like, okay, I will. And I did. And yeah, after that, and like I have more than one paid speaking gig. Then I would set other goals for myself. Like I wanted to speak at one place for Nurses Week. I wanted to be invited somewhere for Nurses Week. And I had that happen. And now for this year, I'm booked 2 weeks straight. And I've probably turned down 10 people for speaking for Nurses Week.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, honey, you should have. Yeah. Like you got to get me now for next year because, you know, people bring me out to do, yeah, their events. I love it. It's one of my favorite things. It's exhausting.
Yeah, the travel yeah. Stuff on family and the body for sure. Was there a specific moment early on, like one of those paid speaking engagements that really made the difference, that really set the tone where it made all the other engagements easier to get? And did you do anything in specifically to get that? Were you cold emailing, cold calling? You get it through a friend recommendation?
Yeah, I'll answer that in a couple of different ways. I did a workshop. One of the first things I did, I contacted a colleague of mine out in San Diego. My family lives out there and I was going to visit. And this colleague of mine worked for a hospital there. And I said, hey, I'm coming out to spend time with my family. Cause you know, every time I'd go out there, I'd stop and see her. I said, I'm willing to do a talk for you. I'll do a workshop, you know, whatever you want, hour, half day. I said, you know, I'm going down the path of bullying, but I can do anything that you want. And she said, let me get back to you. She's like, you know what? We've got a real big problem here with horizontal violence, bullying. Can you do something? I said, yep. And I put it together. Seriously, I didn't have anything yet. I put it together. And out of the, I think there are like 54 people there, 54 people said that workshop should have been mandatory for every single employee. Awesome. So I knew that I hit it right. But I will tell you with the, like, I never really did cold calling. I still don't. I get about 75% of all of my business through word of mouth, through direct referrals. Some of my best clients right now, where they bring me in to do work over and over again, started because one person heard me speak once, recommended me. I went and then ba-boom, ba-boom, and then they recommend me. And that's how most people find me. It's word of mouth.
Yeah, that's amazing. And for those listening, I have a very small story along that line. But when I was a new grad, I literally got invited to speak to the next group of new grads just because I was the only person that dressed well in the entire like 140 person new grad class. I mean, like I talked to, you know, like I mentioned, I love teaching and all that stuff, but the new grad residency program director said, just make sure you come dressed to the nines. And I was like, okay, that's okay. Interesting. And then since then, I gave a talk at San Diego State, and then that snowballed into somebody else referring me. And it's just like what you said, where it just kind of happens. Like if you work on your trade and develop a great,
better work on it.
Yeah. But along those lines, and speaking of outside of my comfort zone, as the old adage goes, when people were surveyed about their biggest fears, public speaking is number one and dying is number two.
Yes.
Whether or not that's true, public speaking is extremely nerve-wracking. Like, what were some things you did to become the prolific speaker that you are today?
Yeah, it took me until probably about 2 years ago before, and this might be a little too much information, but I usually have a visceral reaction when I'm stressed. So I would be in the bathroom before I'd have to go on stage. That's a nervous wreck. Okay. I do a little bit of deep breathing before I get on stage. And I will tell you, Daniel, I still get nervous, but I get nervous for a different reason. I get nervous only because I have two most important, like, this is what I'm trying to accomplish when somebody hires me. I want them, after I'm done, to say, wow, she was worth it. She was worth whatever money we paid her. And she was so easy to work with. Okay. Like I'm super easy to work with. Well, you know that, you know, I'm super flexible, yeah, and I'm easygoing. It's just, you know, but I want them to say she was so worth it. And you know, that I really made a difference. So what I always do is I take a couple of deep breaths. I think about that. And then I say a prayer. And I just say, you know, please make the words come out of my mouth in a way that's going to be meaningful to somebody else. There's somebody in this audience today that needs to hear me, that needs to hear what I have to say. And I try to make sure that I'm thinking about that person. But yeah, I still get nervous, you know, especially if the talks that I give, like my hero talk that I give, I could probably do it in my sleep. But, you know, I still get that little bit of I hope the words come out the way I want them to come out. So there's that. But sometimes if I'm doing something new, or if it's not one of my standard talks or workshops, yeah, I get a little bit more nervous because I'm like, oh, I hope this goes well.
Were there any coaches or books or resources that stuck out in your mind that you used when you were learning how to improve public speaking?
Yeah, well, I've read a lot on public speaking. Gosh, I have a ton of books in my bookcase here. But I started with my presentations because I wanted my PowerPoints to look a certain way. So Presentation Zen was a book that I got that was my Bible for a while. And when I started doing this consulting work in Washington, D.C., I had some of those educators say, wow, you can tell that you're a professional because look at your PowerPoint slides. I'm like, yes. I'm like, I got to tell a presentation Zen. I just learned how to do all this. Okay. Then it's funny because, you know, I was there for 9 months. I'm still friends with some of the people who I worked with. And then I ended up lending them the book and then they kept it. I never got it back from them. What the heck? So I had to go buy buy another one. I actually hired somebody once as a presentation coach. Okay. So this is what I know. I'm a good speaker, but I want to be a great speaker. And what I did was I hired her to review. I had some videotapes of some of my talks and then have her help to help me be a better speaker. And she, you know, I hired her to over the course of, you know, about 6 months, and she helped me with my starts and my stops because I tend to be a long talker, and you know, you got to hit the stage and a big bang and end in a big bang instead of, oh, it's so great to be here and thank you so much and oh, the weather and all this. Now I start, boom, you know, you got to hit them right from the beginning. So she helped me with that. That was very helpful, but I'm still working on my presentation skills and will never stop. I'm always trying to think of how can I say this in a better way? How can I have my stage presence? You know, she taught me this. When you're talking about something, you can walk the stage. But when you want to make a point, then you plant. She says you walk, plant, when it's that meaningful, you know, right there. Walk, plant. Because when she watched a video of me, she's like, you're all over the place. She's like, talk, plant, and plan your plants. So little things like that I learned.
Yeah, those are huge. Those aren't just little things. That makes or breaks a presentation. Other than Presentation Zen, are there any other books that you gift to people often?
Well, I have my own books that I give to people. But when I'm looking at being a better speaker, the National Speakers Association, they have some good books. And if you hang on for one second. I have a couple of other books. Pitch Perfect is one. How to Say It Right the First Time, Every Time. I have this one by Bill McGowan. There's another one. I forget what it's called, but it's like Speak Like Churchill or Lincoln, something like that. And then you know what I've done? I've watched other speakers. You know, you just go on YouTube, and I watch a lot of TED Talks and learned how other people present. There are, you know, Jim Rohn, Darren Hardy. I've watched them. I can't tell you how many times. And I learned from them, too. So I'm always, almost every day, I'm watching a video with somebody else who's speaking, and it helps me to be a better speaker.
That's amazing. So I wanna work towards wrapping up, and I wanna circle back towards the topic of nurse bullying. And like a lot of the advice we see on the internet for dealing with bullies, it feels generic and unhelpful, like stand up for yourself, or you gotta confront the bully, hit him in the face, or you gotta use the chain of command. And I think the reason why you are so successful in your business is because that advice doesn't work.
Nope.
So let's say I'm a new grad. I have less than 6 months of experience. So I don't want to leave my job because it might hurt my chance of getting another one. And I'm someone who is just being terrorized by another nurse or doctor every day. What is an exact script that I can use when confronting the bully?
Yeah, I am big on scripting. It's first of all, pick, and I always tell people to do this, pick one person with one behavior that they do. So get clear on what that is, okay? Then identify which script you're going to use the next time they say or do whatever, and then practice it and then use it. And I'll give you an example. So I don't know if you saw this, Daniel. I have a YouTube channel, and one of the series is that Coffee and Conversations about nurse bullying.
Yep. And which is a great series, by the way. And
thank
it's super
you.
Short. It's super short for those who are listening.
Yeah,
you can
three, 4 minutes.
Download it in chunks.
In December, my daughter, who lives in Raleigh, North Carolina, she came in because she's a school teacher. And we actually, she is a guest on my show, the only guest I've ever had. And I asked her to share her story. So I'll give you an example. She was dealing with a teacher who was new there that she tried to be friends with, who would often say really inappropriate things to my daughter in front of other people and embarrass my daughter. And you know these people.
Yeah.
Like they won't say it when you're alone. No, they say things in front of other people. And she gave some examples, you know, things that she would say. And at first, she thought, oh, that doesn't feel good. That's not all right. But she says, but I blew it off. Because that's what we do. When somebody initially treats us in a way that we think is wrong, we just kind of blow it off. But then it happens again, because if you don't address it from the beginning, they'll do it again. Well, it happened again and again, and she was really frustrated. So she called me, of course, she calls me all the time. And I told her, I said, the next time she says anything to you that embarrasses you in front of other people, look her in the eye and just say, I'm offended by that comment. And sure enough, it happened again. My daughter was so cute on the video. She's like, I was waiting. I was waiting for her to say something. I knew she was going to say something. And she did. And she just looked at her. She said, I'm offended by that comment. Turned around and walked away. And this teacher was like, what? Oh, you know, I'm just messing with you. Because that's what happens when you call them on their behavior. I'm just kidding around, you know, lighten up a little bit. So my daughter kept turning back around saying, I'm offended by that. Like she said, I didn't know what else to say. I just kept saying, I'm offended. And it's a funny video, but it is a perfect example. When you have somebody that you're dealing with who either embarrasses you, screams and yells at you, is nitpicky when you're trying to give them report, whatever the behavior is, then you decide what script, what are you going to say? Like, you have to prepare ahead of time, because I don't know if you're like me, Daniel, but when somebody does that to me or evokes any type of negative emotion, I can't think of what to say in the moment. The next day in the shower, oh, I can think of all sorts of things to say, okay? But in the moment, I paralyze, and then I end up saying something stupid. Yeah. This is why scripting works. Identify the behavior. What script are you going to use the next time they do that? Practice it, and then pull it out. You're ready to go, okay? And I have a whole list of scripts. If anyone's listening who's interested, just go to my website, and you'll see it says free guide, 10 scripts to respond to a disruptive coworker. Click on it, enter your information, you get the scripts.
Yeah, and we'll put those links in the show notes to make it easy for you guys to find. They're great, and you are correct. I am the worst possible person when it comes to dealing with confrontation. I would rather walk out of the fire escape than to have a difficult conversation with somebody. And that, you know, and that's a problem. That's not healthy, because you just internalize the conflict and it comes out in other ways. In a speech you gave, you had a message for the third party in this whole bullying equation.
The witness.
There's the victim. Yep. There's the witness. And you said that they are a hero by choice. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, we know, believe it or not, that the most powerful intervention to stop the cycle of bullying is not for the target to speak up. It's for the witness to speak up. It's for that witness to say, hey, wait a minute, time out, not okay here. And then go and support that target. We call it the bystander effect, where we as humans, we will witness really bad behavior, bad treatment of other people, but we tend to be that bystander. We don't take action until we see one person taking action, and then everybody else will join in to say, hey, stop. Okay. And Dr. Philip Zimbardo is psychologist who has done a lot of work on this. He was actually the researcher who did the Stanford Prison Experiment. He's got an amazing TED Talk, The Psychology of Evil, wrote a book called The Lucifer Effect. I've met him. We've had conversations about his work and as it relates to my work. But what I try to encourage nurses to do, because I'm telling you, Daniel, this happens all the time. Nurses share with me a really bad behavior, like overt behavior that's happening. And I'll say, well, did anybody say anything? People look at me like I have two heads. They're like, what do you mean say something? Yeah, did anybody say, hey, leave her alone or stop that or that's not okay? No, nobody's speaking up. So what I encourage people to do is if you are uncomfortable when you hear or see the way somebody's treating another person, that's your opportunity to step up and say something. And I try to teach nurses to do this in a very non-threatening way. Just say, hey, time out. This is not okay. Not here. You know, like whatever the situation is, but time out, not okay.
There you go. Like, but hero by choice, you get to decide how you're going to live. And this is a theme that our listeners have experienced in the last few episodes, is that we all have a choice. We have a choice for how we're going to live. We have a choice for what jobs we're going to take. We have a choice what we're going to do when we see people acting in a way that's just unacceptable. On that note, you can find her at rtconnections.com, and you're on Facebook, Twitter,
LinkedIn, YouTube, yeah, my blog. Yep.
Yeah, if you search for Dr. Renee Thompson, she's the first person that comes up.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Because Renee Thompson's a common name. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So again, thank you so much.
And you're welcome.
I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. That was episode number 7 of the Project Nurse podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I think Dr. Thompson's story is so great because she showed that you don't need to build some fancy app or a Kickstarter project that never ships. You can make a living off of your passion and your expertise. Do you have knowledge and expertise that you could teach to other nurses that will help them get more out of their career or their life? Or maybe you have an idea for a side business that you've been thinking about on your off days. If you do, share your idea in the comment section of this episode at www.projectnurse.org/podcast, and you will be entered into our Nurses Week giveaway. What are we giving away? Good question. You'll have to listen to our giveaway next week to find out. All you have to do to enter today is head to projectnurse.org/podcast, find episode number 7, and leave a comment with a topic you are passionate about or an idea for a side business that you're trying to get off of the ground. And that's it. You've taken the first step toward a better life, and you may win a sweet prize in the process. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Project Nurse Podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and share the podcast with other nurses. Special thanks to Chill Hop Music at chillhoprecords.com for providing the music for the episode. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Chill Hop Radio, giving you what you need for the bright day ahead. And right now, get ready for the last track of Landis' new EP, Mocha. How beautiful is that day gonna be?